Hi, my name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to the Harpen and Rugby Podcast, the Leinster and Ireland fan site in audio form. This is the fifth in our series of preseason pods. If you subscribe to our feed, you can go back and listen to three episodes that take an in-depth look at Leinster's squad for the new season. Then in the fourth one, we covered the other Irish provinces. Many thanks to those who pointed out the little glitch when I first published that one, by the way. Thankfully, all should be working fine with it now. Next, we're going to turn the spotlight on the other four URC nations, and I spoke to a fan from each of them, so without any further ado, here's how we got on. Joining me to give an overview of the Welsh regions ahead of the 21-22 campaign is someone getting their first Harpen cap. He runs an excellent site, which is all about Cardiff Rugby Life, which is conveniently titled Cardiff Rugby Life. A warm welcome to Mr. Dan Pearce.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for coming on. Well, first of all, tell us all about your site and how you got it going.
So I was a couple of years ago, getting a bit frustrated with where the Cardiff Blues, as we were then, were going. So I thought, well, no one's interested in my rants on the terraces anymore. So I'll start taking my frustration out on the keyboard instead and just started writing a few things, and people liked what I was writing. So started setting it up a bit properly, running a proper website and getting a Twitter account up and going. And it's been really good. Conversing with a lot of Cardiff rugby fans outside of my little bubble I go with. It's been great.
Yeah, it's good. And you cover the Blues and the Cardiff RFC as well. You do basically all rugby all around the region.
Yeah. Any teams playing out of the Arms Park, first or seconds, and yeah, I'll have a look at the development pathway as well as players are coming through.
Brilliant. Okay, so we have you on today to have a look at all four Welsh regions ahead of the United Rugby Championship and basically the new season. I've put them conveniently in alphabetical order, so we can start with your Blues, Cardiff Blues. How are the Blues set up for the new season anyway?
Yeah, I think we're in quite a good spot. I think we came to the RDS sort of back end of the autumn international time last season, and obviously we've had a coaching change since then. John Mulvihill left over Christmas time and Di Young's come back. And I think our performances in the Rainbow Cup are really positive. He's got us play into our strengths a bit more. I think previously we would go away to Ireland, Leinster, Munster, and try and take you guys on up front a bit too much and end up getting outpowered. Dye's got us playing in the Rainbow Cup, trying to link in more with our athletic side. We're not the biggest side in the competition, but I think everybody understands we've got a very exciting back line, some great players there, Thomas Williams, Jared Evans, Halaholo and Lilo in the centre, and then obviously Josh Adams off the back of the Lions tour this summer. So if those forwards can move away from trying to blast themselves over the gain line, which doesn't really happen for us, and we'll try and outrun the opposition, try and play to our strength with our skills and our speed, then we've got a great chance of kicking on a bit this season.
So that's the Blues. Moving on to the Dragons. Now, they're the only team that didn't quite make it into the Champions Cup. There was talk today that they might end up playing the Cheetahs in a Challenge Cup, so that'd be interesting. But how are they set?
Yeah, they have problems every year, the Dragons, because obviously they're the lowest budgeted side out of the four teams, and that they really struggle from that lack of strength and depth. And when they can get their first 23 out, they're quite competitive. And I think they had a much more positive season last season. Winning six of their 16 games is the best they've done for a little while. And they've had a decent recruitment window this summer. Will Rowland's coming in from Wasps, and a couple of overseas guys, Aki Siuli from Glasgow and Masake Doge from Brive, bolstering the front row as well. It's going to be as it ever was for the Dragons, though. If they can avoid too many injuries in key positions, then they'll do well. But that lack of strength in depth does bite them quite a lot. So once they lose sort of two or three players from key positions, it is often a struggle for them. But if they can stay fit, they'll kick on again. And Dean Ryan's got some good young talent there to utilize.
Absolutely. That moves us on to the Ospreys. Now, I think the Leinster Ospreys was always the league's first kind of organic rivalry that they came out of it. They had played a couple of finals and stuff, and it was more of a typical Osprey season last season. They didn't start too great, but they had a good second half. That's kind of what they're kind of known for and stuff. And they came to the RDS and really put it up to us second half of the season. So they must be on an upward curve.
Absolutely. I think For my money, I think they're the Welsh side to watch this season. I think they've had the best recruitment window out of all four sides. Toby Booth obviously has had a season there now as head coach to assess the squad that he's got, and he's identified where they need to strengthen, and they've done some brilliant business. Thomas Francis coming back from Exeter, Alex Cuthbert the same, Jack Morgan coming across from the Scarlets, and then a couple of really exciting young players from the Southern Hemisphere, Ethan Roots, Michael Collins, and Jack Regan, Irish qualified as well. I think he started at Ulster, coming in from the Highlanders. So, and then they've got Gareth Anscombe as well, back fit, who will be like a new signing. He will make his debut despite signing 2 years ago, whenever it was. So, no, I think if they can click early and get that fast start, which they do sometimes lack, then they could be a real side to watch this season.
Definitely. And all that leaves now is the Scarlets. And I mean, we've talked about all these teams in a positive way. And the Scarlets are actually the last Welsh team to win the league. And they had a couple of golden years there a while ago. They've kind of, you know, changed in coaching and all this kind of stuff. They kind of went down a little bit, but they still have the potential to get back there.
Absolutely. I think they still got on paper the strongest squad out of the four Welsh sides. And they've obviously the main thing for them this summer has been the change in coaching, Glenn Delaney leaving and Dwayne Peel coming in, and someone who you'll know well, I expect Hugh Hogan has joined as defence coach as well from Leinster. So that'll be, it was their defence last year at times that really let them down. So if he can get that defence firing, then that'll be key for them. They brought in a couple of exciting players, players who know the club. Tom Price is back from Exeter, Corey Baldwin the same, Scott Williams is back from the Ospreys. And then Thomas Lozano, Argentina international, Will Griff-John, who's been in and around the Wales squad for a little while. So they've bolstered in the right areas. It's just about whether, obviously, Dwayne Peel came in quite late. They're not particularly his signings. It's not necessarily his squad. So it'll just be about how he gets to grips with that squad early on. I think it might be another up and down season for them, but maybe it probably leads into a good season the following year then.
Yeah. And I mean, because one thing about this particular season is that it's like it's totally up in the air. What with COVID, the rebrand, we don't even have fixtures yet. We're not actually sure who's playing who. We're not sure if we can get crowds in. And obviously, you know, the priority in countries now is it's always the test matches anyway, Ireland and everywhere because of the crowd numbers. But especially now after the couple of years we've had with empty stadiums. So it's really going to be a year of adjustment. But I mean, when you and I are talking about the actual teams and the coaches that are preparing, their preparations are still going to be the same. It's just they need matches to play at the weekend to show what they could do. And I suppose the other factor, and I was wondering what you think of this, is how the Welsh teams are going to cope with the South African clubs coming in, because that's a new challenge.
Yeah, and I think For the Welsh sides in particular, obviously I mentioned Cardiff and our lack of power up front earlier, and that's sort of a theme throughout the Welsh game. If you look at Wales on the international stage, we get a decent pack together, but we don't, in Wales, I don't know if it's a genetic thing or what, but we don't naturally produce big people. Some of our bigger guys over the last few years have been, you look at like Talupi Faletau, for example, has obviously got his Tongan heritage. We're not naturally big people in Wales. So going up against the South Africans who base their game around that power up front and then try and utilise their pace out wide, it's going to be a unique challenge, I think, something which we haven't dealt with. And obviously when you go out to South Africa, then you end up playing altitude or in different weathers, hard pitches. So it's going to be a really good test, but it'll link in really well for the national teams. Obviously we've had good success in Six Nations and just about in World Cups over the last few years, but our record against the Southern Hemisphere sides has been quite poor actually. So if we can meet those challenges week in, week out at club level, then it'll do the national team really good as well.
Definitely. I mean, there is a lot of positives there with those clubs coming in. We just, like I say, hope we do actually get to play them this year when we get some fixtures. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. I have a funny feeling there might be an announcement in the next couple of days. So hopefully we'll get more clarity on that. And in terms of the fans, you say you deal with a lot of the fans of Cardiff and all that kind of stuff. Whatever they did with this league, they had to rebrand it. They had to get rid of that 14 number, Pro 14, because it was going to be ever expanding. So they had to come up with something new. Whatever they did, there might have been a lot of reaction to it. But it's a new concept. It's a new. It's a shorter regular season. There's different slight twinges to the format. What's the kind of uptake of the competition over there? Does it need to be played before they can really give an opinion?
Yeah, I think the problem for, you know, over the last few years since the Celtic League and all the iterations since then, it will never be totally popular in Wales, because there's still most of the people who come to watch the four teams week in, week out remember the time when Welsh sides were playing the English sides every other weekend. You could go away to Bath, Bristol, Gloucester. They're all just over Severn Bridge. It's all close. So people do hark back to those days quite a lot. And there's, you know, there's a lot of internal Welsh rugby politics there about missed opportunities to go and play, and then regional sides coming out, and whether they're regions or clubs. And so the league takes a lot of flack for issues which are actually internal Welsh issues as well. But I think this is a real chance to get it right for Welsh supporters. I think taking games outside of international windows, so there's no clashes with Wales games, is really key. Getting our internationals on the pitch as much as possible. And I noticed that, you know, when they initially announced some of the round dates, there was maybe one or two more clashes than we'd hoped there would be because of out of window tests. But there's a suggestion that though that's being changed now as well, so there's no games on any international weekends. And so that'll be big for the competition. I think what people want is, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the competition is. If the Welsh sides are winning, then the supporters will come. And the issue has been that mostly because of our own internal issues, they haven't been winning. But I think those things are slowly being ironed out, so that if we can, and, you know, at least three of the sides are set up for a positive season this season, I think. So if we can have a winning season, and we can play some of the best players from Ireland and South Africa, get their internationals on the pitch a lot more as well, then the competition can only improve reputational wise in Wales from that sense.
Definitely. Well, listen, that's great. That's a great overview there, Dan. I really, really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to, I'm looking forward to getting some fixtures. Looking forward to basically watching our teams play at the weekends, which is all we all want at the end of the day. Listen, I want to thank you for coming on. We hope to get you on for a bit of a longer chat, maybe closer, when Leinster do eventually play Cardiff. But in the meantime, listen, thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me to look at the South African clubs coming into the URC ahead of the 21-22 season is someone making his second appearance at the pond. He's the owner of a great site called Scrum 5. A warm welcome back to Mr. Andy Daniel.
Hey, Jeff. How are you? It's great to be back on again. Thanks for inviting me back. I kind of messed up too much first time around, eh?
Indeed, yeah. And we're looking at the United Rugby Championship. Just to have a, go over the clubs and see how they're set up for the season, for the new campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be really interesting, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the South African clubs not necessarily wanting the move, but I think they've had to accept that it's the way forward. New Zealand and South African rugby's relationship is rather fractious at the moment, and Australia have hardly sort of stayed out of it, I suppose. But I think the move was always inevitable for two reasons. Financially, for SARU, it had to happen. And also, just with the for the player welfare. I mean, the flights and the time differences are, very similar. I just think it's probably more cost effective. I think they'll probably be on more flights, but obviously they're a lot more sort of short haul, and they'll be able to camp there and do it. I think it was a move that had to happen. And it'll be interesting. I think from my point of view, I think the South African clubs, the four that are coming into it, we've sort of, I think you've got to give them a bit of leeway in that first year. It's going to be a huge cultural change for them. It's fine playing at home. They are going to be playing on plastic pitches for the first time. They're going to be playing at Connacht on a wet Sunday afternoon for the first time. And it's going to be amazing to watch the European clubs come down this way and adapt to it. But I think from a South African point of view, that adaption is going to be tenfold almost more than what the European clubs have got to go through. Style of rugby, the partisan crowds as well. I mean, like the Bulls will never have experienced Ravenhill on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. They'll never have experienced the RDS on a Friday night. I mean, these are places that are full of folklore and full of history, and Tormund Park and places like that. So, for me, I think it's a huge learning curve for the South African clubs. And it would be easy for us to all jump on a bandwagon if they fail, I suppose, is that the right word? But if they fail in the first season and don't really make an impression, nor did the Cheaters. And before the lockdown, I think the Cheaters had 5 of 6 games left at home. Mm-hmm. And they were in prime position to really push on in that Pro 14. Not saying they would have won it, but they would have really got into that knockout stage and actually made a play for the title. So it took time. The Southern Kings never had the resources that the Cheaters got, and neither of them have got the resources that these four teams have got. So I think the first year we need to judge it. And then secondly, it's when they get into that Heineken Cup. That's when we can really, really talk about where South African club rugby is at. The problem is, for me, SARU have pinned all their resources to the Springbok mast, whereas, and these four provinces, mm-hmm. Franchises, and then beyond that, there is nothing. I mean, the Cheaters are still there. The Currie Cup has been really not a spectacle to watch in any sort of way. So they have pinned all their colours to the mast. They've pinned their colours on these four teams. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. But I do think as rugby followers, we need to give them a bit of leeway and don't jump on the hammer the South African bandwagon if they don't particularly do very well in the first year. There's so much they've got to adjust to: coaching styles, pitch styles, fan styles, everything. But I know, you know one thing for sure: the South Africans are going to embrace it like no one else. But I just want to see them getting that Heineken Cup. I mean, the thought of going to a Stormers versus Toulon game in Cape Town just gives me shivers. Like, it needs to happen, and then we can truly judge where the South African domestic game is at.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because I mean, there's been a lot of humming and hawing about the format that this competition has taken, and but one thing it does do is it ring fences a spot in the Heineken Cup for the South African Cubs. I don't have any problem with them joining the competition. A lot of people say, but it's Europe. I mean, for God's sake, Australia goes into Eurovision, for God's sake. You know, let's run with the times. You know, this is how the game's played. And if we wanted the South African Cubs to join, who wouldn't make that a deal breaker? If they're going to, you know, you just let them play in the URC and not play in the prime, sit at the top table in Europe. I mean, that's just crazy. So it's good for them that they've got this, the South African pool of the four teams, and whoever wins that, definitely, no matter how they do in the overall standings, they'll get into Europe and you'll at least have that. But I think maybe more could get into it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the South African teams maybe either keep hold of their players a bit longer or potentially attract players back. And if they're starting to do well in Europe, then obviously with that comes capital. With that comes a chance to keep the players that are travelling abroad to sort of put their name out there for the bigger contracts. It'd be so interesting to see how it plays out and how it's managed behind the scenes. But it's probably a 2-hour show just on that alone. But it will be so interesting to watch the progression both on and off the field of South African franchise rugby as this moves forward, for sure.
Definitely. Okay, so let's just take a quick look through the four clubs and see how they're set up going into the season. Let's start with the Bulls.
Well, Currie Cup champions, they'll be favourites to win it again this year. I probably wouldn't judge them on that game against Benetton too much. It was still a strong Bulls side. It wasn't a full Bulls side, but it was a strong Bulls side, and they will have expected to have gone there and won it. I mean, to be beaten by a captain like Diewald Duvenager, who's a Stormers legend, would have just hurt a little bit more. They just didn't turn up, did they? They just didn't turn up. So I wouldn't judge them on that. They will be the strongest of the four. There's no two ways about that. There's some fantastic players in there. And there's a lot of young players coming through as well. Jake White's taken a lot of flack for bringing in older players. But there's two for me that are really going to be key. One is an older player in the fact that we've known him, but he's not actually that old in age, is Johan Huysen, who's come back from Montpellier. And He was quite open. I think he had a when he after he played against SAA and he during the Lions tour, and he tore them apart, didn't he? And he just said afterwards, "I just want to speak Afrikaans and play rugby." And I think that's the sort of guy that he is. He's such a dangerous runner with ball in hand. He attracts defenders and he opens gaps for people. So I remember when he broke onto the scene. He played at Twickenham and England actually gave South Africa a good beating that day, but Huisen came on with about 20 minutes to go. He scored a try, I think, if I remember rightly. And he looked dangerous every time he had the ball in hand. And he looks like that guy again now. And then there's another guy who I used to watch for Pyle Gymnasium about 50 yards from my house called Stravino Jacobs. They pronounce it Jacobs over here. And they call him the Rocket Man. And he's only like 19. And he's like the same height as Colby, but twice as wide. And he's been scoring for fun. And he's just watch out for Stravino. I think he's someone I've watched from school age all the way up, and now he's got his real chance. So yeah, the Bulls will be the strongest. There's no two ways about that. And they've got some box in there. They're the ones that will probably set the benchmark, I'd imagine. But close behind that will be the Sharks. Now, we know that the Sharks have invested a lot of money. Marco Mazzotti has invested a lot of money. Roc Nation have invested a lot of money, and they seem to be signing anybody that wants to go under the Roc Nation banner. And they're moving forward very quickly. Trevor Nyakani is up there now. But the man for me to watch this year will be Apaleli Fassi. No two ways about it. I know probably haven't seen too much of him in Europe yet, but he's torn up the Currie Cup for the last 2 years. I don't know if you saw his finish against Argentina a couple of weeks back. Unreal one-handed take. He scares the living daylights out of me. And although he's playing on the wing for the box at the moment, he's a fantastic fullback. You know when like Anthony Watson's on fire for Bath? That's Apaleli Fassi. Plus, he's got probably Jason Robinson's feet to go with it, which is just irritating for somebody to have that much ability. But they'll be really strong up front. And if people are silly enough to kick open field to the Sharks, they will punish you. So they're on the rise quicker than any other province, and they've got the money and the potential. I mean, I think they're going to make a cheeky bid for Cheslin Colby. They're not going to pull it off because it looks like he's getting it too long. But that's the ambition these guys have got. The Sharks, I think the Sharks will probably be the best to watch. But I think the Bulls is probably the strongest squad. The Lions, this is going to be the weakest of the four, which is quite ironic because they've been so close in Super Rugby in the last sort of 5 years, haven't they? Got to finals and things like that, but it's really difficult to pick out some outstanding players from them, to be honest with you. There's a young lad in the back row called Frank Horn who's come through Pyle Boys High, where I live, and he's making an impression, and he's still young and he probably needs a couple of years, but there's some exciting guys kicking around there, but they are definitely in a rebuilding phase. They're definitely in a when they took a hammering from the Sharks the other day in the Currie Cup. So they're struggling, and I think the Lions will be the ones that people will target. They've obviously got altitude in their favour, but if they're out of the game after 60 minutes, altitude's not going to help anybody. Mm-hmm. And then that leaves us with the Stormers, the good old Stormers. The behind the scenes of the Stormers is an absolute mess. It's the boardroom's in a mess. There's people trying, like Marco Mazzotti actually tried to take over the Stormers until they rejected his bid, and now look what he's doing at the Sharks. So if there's any regret anywhere, it's in Cape Town. New stadium, which is going to be amazing to watch rugby in. It's such an amazing stadium. Again, really strong squad. Well, in fact, a really strong 15, but behind that is where they struggle. So there's some really good young talent coming through there, and guys that have won things like Varsity Cup over here, which is massive. So you've got people like Edwill van der Merwe. His highlight reel from the last year is superb. You've got Ernst van Rijn, again, won Varsity Cup with Marty's down in Stellenbosch. And players like that coming through. And then I'm not sure how long Peter Steffen Toy is going to be out But I've got a feeling he's probably not going to play for them again. And obviously the loss of Khaleesi, no matter what you think of Khaleesi as a player, I don't think he's the greatest open side in the world, but he's clearly a fantastic leader. There's no two ways about it. Herschel Yankees needs to up his game a little bit. But for me, if there's one player out of probably all the four franchises that could be actually, it's probably going to be a year too early, but could be a random bolter for the November Internationals, there's a guy called Ivan Rus. Plays at number eight. Scored one of the most iconic inter-schools tries here in Pahl. Inter-schools is Pahl's got the biggest inter-schools game in the world, and I was lucky enough to be there that day. Just picked the most amazing line, but there's actually a fantastic clip online at the moment. About, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago, playing against the Sharks, and he had like four defenders hanging off him, and he was still going. And he got there, got to the try line, like he's just an absolute power unit. And I think this lad could, in 3 or 4 years' time, be the Vermeulen replacement. And he's heading in the right direction. And he's powerful, he's compact, he's hard to bring down, he's a fantastic ball carrier, and he's fast. So watch Ivan Rus at eight. He's going to develop into a fantastic, fantastic international rugby player. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, the Stormers overall, if they can put it together on the day, they're okay. They'll get results. They're sort of like mid-table obscurity, I'd imagine. So the Bulls and the Sharks will lead the way. Stormers will hold it, probably get some nice home wins, especially if we can get crowds back into stadiums. But I think the Lions are going to struggle big time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's a great overview there. Yeah, I mean, really getting excited about it now. We don't have fixtures yet. We don't know who's playing who. It's supposed to be starting in a few weeks, but all the rumors say that they're going to start with the game between the Leinsters and the Bulls at the RDS in the first weekend. So if that's what happens, I mean, even if they don't have their internationals, like you say, there's a lot of prospects coming forward to make it an interesting start to the season. So fingers crossed it'll go well. We can only just, you know, at this stage, we're looking forward to any kind of rugby here as things are standing, but there's definitely a lot to look forward to. Listen, Andy, thanks a million for coming on. It's just a brief chat today, but you've given a great overview there and told us what we have to expect, and we hope to have you on later on in the season when we've had some rugby to watch.
Mate, let's hope so. And let's hope it's just going to be great to watch teams playing other teams, isn't it?
Yes.
The derbies are so important to all of us, but you can't watch six or eight in a season because then it's not a derby anymore. It's just another game of rugby. So
it's like a training exercise. Let's
hope we learn a lot, and let's hope we have some fresh rugby. And I think that's what we need, isn't it? Some freshness into rugby.
So, absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
Okay, thanks a million, Andy. We'll have you on again soon. Joining me to look at the Scottish clubs ahead of the 21-22 season is someone making his fifth appearance in the pod. A warm welcome back to our Edinburgh and Scotland correspondent, Mr. Sandy Smith.
Evening, everybody. Hope you're well.
Indeed. Great to have you back on. So, we're getting closer to the start of this URC season. We still don't have fixtures. We still don't have we just have a bare outline of how the season's going to go. But you know yourself, where the preseason's going on, they're all training and they're getting ready for some rugby. So there will be something happening in the next few weeks. So we'll see what happens. But basically, we've got you on to look at the two Scottish clubs going into this new league, and we'll start with your lads, Edinburgh. How what kind of off season have they had?
Interesting is probably the operative word. Richard Cockrell, who had been the coach of Edinburgh for the last four seasons, shall we say, left. And apparently for no reason, but just under they thought it was time. However, has subsequently, in a short space of time, been quoted as being the New England forwards coach. So I think there was more to that than meets the eye.
Bit of an overlap there.
Yeah. So they've brought in Mike Blair as the new head coach, a former Scotland coach, former Edinburgh scrum half. So, you know, he's a good signing, albeit he's an internal signing, if you like. Mm. All the recruitment work would appear to have been done, perhaps with one or two exceptions, by Richard Cockrell before he left. Mm-hmm. The likes of James Lang, the centre from Harlequins, Adam McBurney from Ulster, Ben Vellacott, the scrum half, I think he was playing with Gloucester, I think, latterly. They were all Richard Cockle signings, tight head prop. You know, he obviously knows that very well. And then within a week of Mike Blair, 10 days being appointed, he had announced a couple of extra players. Again, you suspect that they were probably on the cards before that. The Argentinian centre, Emiliano Buffelli, who seems a real prospect, 26, played quite a lot. And another Argentinian, capped Ramiro Moyano. Both have been playing in France, so they're joining the club for the season, for the start of the season. Buffelli will be a wee bit later because he's still in the Argentinian squad for the rugby championships. I think overall they brought in 10 new players, and of those, I think the one that I think it's probably the most exciting is the Argentinian lad Buffelli, because a couple to watch for, to be honest, in Edinburgh's ranks. As a young lad came through, Cameron Hutchison, inside centre. It's been a difficult position for Edinburgh. Never really been tied down by anybody. He came in for a few games towards the end of last season, and despite Edinburgh being fairly poor, he's shone above some of the others. So despite the arrival of James Lang, who's obviously a direct competitor for that inside centre berth, I think that'll be quite a tight one, and I think Hutchison will get quite a lot of game time. A real crash ball type with some good skills as well. So, you want to know how I think we will get on?
Yeah, we're because I'd be interested to see how this new format would affect the Scottish teams, because they basically it's 16 clubs, which led them to divvy it up into four kind of mini sections, for at least for qualifying for Europe anyway. But because they have 4-4-4-4, but they kind of had to throw the Scots and the Italians together in one separate group. So does that could go both ways for you?
Well, I mean, I suppose it remains to be seen whether, and traditionally Edinburgh and Glasgow have probably had the better of Benetton and Zebre. Mm-hmm. Obviously Benetton had a great end to the year with winning the Rainbow Cup. I'm not convinced that they can carry that on, to be honest, into the league at all. That could work in our favour. I mean, the biggest issue for Edinburgh is with a new coach and a lot of new players, how many are going to be in that starting 15 and how quickly they'll settle down. I mean, we could easily pick a 15 that didn't include any of these new people, but what would be the point? It would be a bit, just wouldn't really make any point to it. So I think they'll, but potentially if they get it right, because I think for Edinburgh, they'll still be strong up front, because the ones that they've brought in forward-wise look good prospects. We've retained most of our forwards. We obviously lost Duane van der Merwe and Rory Sutherland to Worcester in the summer. Of that, obviously, Sutherland's the loose head, but we still have Pierre Schumann at the loose. So I think we'll retain some strength up front. For Edinburgh, what will make a difference is whether Mike Blair as a back can actually make the three-quarter line function in more than just a blunt force to do something a bit interesting with the ball. Should do. I mean, he's worked with Townsend at Scotland. He's a back himself, so hopefully he's got that. That's the plan. And it seems from some of the sound bites coming out of the players that they are already looking to expand the game plan. And time remains to be seen.
Yeah, and hopefully as well you'll have some. The Challenge Cup is really up in the air as well, but there'll be a few extra games, and especially if the Cheetahs get involved as well.
That was a strange one.
But you probably could do with a few extra games as well there. So hopefully that happens for you.
Yeah, I think Edinburgh will probably finish up somewhere in the middle of the table, and we're building towards again the year following, but could be wrong, and hopefully I'm wrong in the right direction.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's have a look at the other lot then. They got Glasgow got into the Champions Cup, so they have a bit of that rugby as well. But they're, I mean, otherwise, are they set up pretty much the same, or a bit more continuity with the coaching, or what's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, they were lucky in that obviously the new coach at Glasgow came in partway through last season, so he's really settled in, and they had a pretty good Rainbow Cup. I think they finished third. Still got some recruits coming in. A couple of their own Argentinians and Domingo Miotti, who's currently playing 10 for the Pumas. Mm-hmm. And a winger, Sebastian Cancellieri. A couple of other good notable ones there that were highlighted to me by a good pal of mine who's a Glasgow man. Jack Dempsey, who's a wing forward, an Australian wing forward. Good few caps for Australia, but has decided to throw his lot in over in Glasgow. Has some Scottish relatives, although I think having played for Australia, it's not going to be a residency or a relative. I think he's burnt his bridges in that regard, but he seems a good recruit. And the other one that's quite interesting is Tongan, who has a Scottish granny, who has come in from Japan. It's a guy called, hopefully I get it right, Sione Tuipulotu. And he's a centre, and as you would imagine, big Tongan centre looks like a real handful.
Yeah.
And he actually arrived before the start of the summer. I can't remember whether they played or not, but without having really touched ground, was named in the Scotland squad for the summer season. Obviously, there were no games played because of the pandemic, but. That's an interesting one. Again, that's another one. I'm not sure how. I mean, he looks good and he could be very well, but that Japanese league is not very good.
Yeah.
So hopefully, for Glasgow's sake anyway, he's able to get up to speed with a higher level of competition quite quickly. I just had a quick look to see his last game he played in Japan, and it finished something like 56-25.
Oh, God.
So
that's almost super rugby levels.
What was it used to be called? Super touch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Glasgow have also, I mean, they've raided Edinburgh. I think as the Cockerill reign came to an end, he decided that one young back rower and the former Rory Darge, who's a really good player, really impressed by him. Ali Miller, who played quite a lot for Edinburgh as a kind of, if you like, a second string number eight or wing forward, played with Scotland Sevens. Again, he's not somebody I would have let go because I think he's a really good player, but with the back row options Edinburgh have got, you could see why potentially to get more game time. Somebody to look out for. I'm not going to go any further than Ross Thompson, the fly half. Mm-hmm. Despite obviously some competition in that position last season, he came in and looked to the manor born. Really, a young lad, really looks good. They got to the point that they played Hastings at fullback rather than move Thompson out of there. Duncan Weir's back at Glasgow. And as I said, they've signed that Argentinian guy, but don't be surprised to see Thompson still running the show at 10. I think Glasgow are going to do well. I hate to say it, local rivalry, but I think they could. I think they'll be competitive, and I think they'll just carry on from. I think they've got the goods to carry on from where they were at the tail end of this last season.
Okay, well, listen, that's brilliant. Just having a quick overview, and that's as good as we'd want. Thanks a million for coming on, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Maybe later in the season when Ireland are about to play Scotland or Leinster are about to play Edinburgh, we'll get you on again and have a chat. So,
super.
Best of luck to you, sir.
You too. Thanks.
Joining me now to look at the Italian clubs ahead of the 21-22 season is someone making the second appearance of the pod. He runs a great site called the Italian Rugby Blog. Welcome back, Mr. Tom Golden.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Great to have you on again. We spoke earlier on, and I'll put a link so people have a can listen to our chat from before, because you explained your site and how you've got it set up and what got you interested in Italian rugby. And at the time, it was kind of in the early stages of the Rainbow Cup. So one or two things have happened in Italian rugby since then, namely that amazing final. How did you see it?
It was amazing. It was particularly gratifying how well we played in it. I thought didn't scrape through, didn't get an awful, well, the bounce of the ball was lucky, but we kind of made our own luck in that game, and it was just one of the best performances I've seen by an Italian side in my life.
Absolutely. And of course, there was sort of a bittersweet kind of thing after that, because one thing we spoke about, I remember asking you about, particularly about Garbisi. He's such
you
a talent,
it,
and,
didn't you?
And what I did. That's kind of a thing. Would he be able to? Would they be able to keep him? Sure. Now he's off to Montpellier. I mean, I think that might be good for the Italian sides, assuming they don't play him to death in that league. You know, that can be attritional, but he'll get a lot of experience against at a good standard of rugby there. So, but I mean, as far as Benetton are concerned, why don't we get on to the clubs? And we're looking at Benetton and Zebra going into this new iteration of this competition. It's had many names over the years. Now it's got a complete rebrand with whole new teams involved. And we're all, you know, all the different countries are talking about how their teams. How do you see, first of all, Benetton fitting into this new league with their set of players they have?
Yes, really, really. I'm really interested to see Benetton, because it's so unpredictable, because they've just, after that win, they've changed so much. Kieran Crowley's left for the Italian job, and Bortolami's come in, and he's brought in Andrea Mazzi from Wasps Academy, and then also Paul Gustard as well. So it's completely different coaching setup, and I think what I'm really interested to see is whether they try and recreate the kind of tactics they used in the Rainbow Cup, where Kieran Crowley is kind of an ex-scrum half who kind of likes that fast ball, where I almost think Bortolami might go for a more kind of forward-driven game plan. And especially because he's lost Tommaso Allen and Garbisi, his two fly halves in one summer, I find it hard to imagine him trying to kind of recreate that. And he's also lost Jaden Hayward as well, who was kind of a massive kind of cog in Kieran Crowley's game plan. He liked kind of two playmakers, one left foot, one right foot. So I'm really interested to see them. They've had a really strange summer in terms of losing loads of experienced players, as well as the two fly halves, and made a lot of transfers in, but they got two really, really young fly halves, and I just can't see them kind of building a game plan around them. Italy's under 20 fly half, and a young Argentinian called Albornoz. Or they might try and use Padovani. I don't know if you remember a player called Padovani, who started out as a fly half but has been playing on the wing. Yeah, it's a bit of a sticky situation, but I think they've got a forward pack who they could build a kind of game around, like Benetton of old kind of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because that is obviously a lot of creative talent to lose. But on the other hand, with the league rebranding and the, you know, you building on the success of that, you know, I mean, whatever they say about the competition, the sight of, first of all, watching the game itself and the way you got such a good result, dominated such a good South African team, and then just the visuals of them lifting the trophy and the success that goes with that
creates the fans, a lot of, though, so.
Exactly, and yeah. The marketing possibilities that are there to get bums on seats. I mean, it you know, whatever about the actual squad, I mean, do you think there might be a buzz going into this season for Benetton in particular?
It seems, I mean, from reading, it's quite rare for kind of interviews to come out of clubs saying that they've had a bad preseason, but the kind of things which have been saying, players have been saying, is that the kind of mindset which they've gone into the season with is improving on last season. So it's really unpredictable. I mean, however big a loss Garbisi is, they've got some really great players who have stayed there, people like Calafiti and Ioni. But Michele Lamaro, who's going to be co-captain this season with Dudoj, he's only about 23. I think he's going to be, he could be a huge, huge player for them, and he's probably Italy as well, but he's so young, but he's already a leader. So he's going to be the one who I'm going to really enjoy watching this season, I think.
Mm. And if they do have that difference of a squad that they might need to get a bit of confidence going, do you think, like, they've started to get a bit used to qualifying for Champions Cups in previous years? Do you think it kind of maybe suits them now that assuming the competition happens, that the Challenge Cup, that they might get a decent run there, and that could be where they'll have some success this season?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting how. Because also with the United Rugby Championship kind of not interfering with international windows, it's going to be interesting to see how teams manage their squads. But that's one of the kind of things which I think Benetton will be quite happy with, is that they've got an absolutely massive squad for the season. They've got loads of young players who might not quite be ready for it, but are going to be able to kind of step in, and there won't be that kind of usual thing which happens with Italian teams, where when the international window comes along, half or maybe more of their first team gets taken to the national team. And with that not happening, it won't give them an edge over other teams, but that kind of, they'll have less of a disadvantage, shall we say.
Absolutely. And I suppose we better, before we run out of time here, we better not leave out poor Zebra. They obviously, they weren't going to match the success of Benetton, but would it be a much tougher challenge for them?
It's a strange one, because last season Michael Bradley got voted coach of the season by the coaches. So the other coaches obviously saw something in the way he was doing things. But the really interesting thing about Zebra this season is they've had another really busy summer in terms of players going in and out. And now they've really kind of become the kind of Italian breeding ground. And
developmental kind of role.
So only three of their whole squad aren't eligible to play for Italy. So there's just a real kind of, this is what the team's going to be. And they've got loads of young players who have come through. There's a prop called Ion Nicolai, who played for the under-20s, who looks like he's going to be a really, really good player. I'm really interested to see him, whether he gets much game time. They lost Mori, who was a young centre, to the French League as well. He's got over there. But they've got their captain coming back, Tommaso Castello, who's been out for 2 years. So it's going to be really interesting seeing him come out again, and whether he can kind of bring a bit more leadership. And then the last thing which really excites me about Zebre, which I'm really looking forward to, is a back row of Gio Marioli and Licata both playing together. They've kind of been kind of playing really well, but only when the other one is injured. And now they're kind of coming into a season both back from injury, and they're just kind of game changers. Lots of offloads, lots of line breaks and stuff. I haven't seen those two kind of playing together an awful lot, so I'll be interested in that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot to look forward to. Like, I mean, the rebrand, the new kind of format and stuff. It's new teams coming in. And of course, if anyone, I've talked to fans from all around the league, and they're all saying, oh, you know, we're afraid of these, not afraid, but it's going to be different style going against these South African clubs coming in. Yeah. So that'll be no bother to the likes of Benetton. They've done that. they'll be grand with all that. No, seriously, Tom, listen, that's brilliant. We're only on for a quick chat now. I'll just say to you, readers, that Tom's done a really good piece on his site about this exact topic. It goes much more in depth. I'll leave a link to it in the program notes. Be sure to check it out. And hopefully later in the season, probably if Leinster are playing Benetton or Ireland, Italy or something, we'll get you on again and have a chat then. So thank you, Tom.
Pleasure. Good to see you again.
No problem. Thanks again to Dan, Andy, Sandy and Tom for the chats. Just the one pod left in this series, where we'll have a look at Irish women's rugby as well as the men's club game. That one should post on Sunday, so be sure to keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.